We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you missed us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here.
Yes.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, yes. House Party,
yes.
YouTube,
there.
Twitch, Black Planet. I know y'all talking about our OnlyFans. It's going crazy in there. MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the TikTok and Google+.
This episode, we'll be putting you up on excessive heat warning remains in effect until 11 p.m. Monday night. And Biden calls for using COVID-19 aid to address rise in violent crime.
And the emergency eviction moratorium press conference today at 2 p.m. And the Department of Justice challenges Georgia's new voting law.
But let's get right into it. Pacific Northwest is baking in a record-breaking heat wave with an all-time high of 111 degrees Fahrenheit reported Saturday in Portland, Oregon. Along the West Coast, more than 20 million people are under a heat warning or advisory from the Canadian border to the Mexican border. Hundreds of daily temperature records have been broken. Monthly, June records, and all-time records are also possible, especially today through Tuesday for some locations. Extreme heat over long periods will significantly increase the potential for heat-related illnesses. Portland International Airport recorded a record-breaking high of 111 degrees on Saturday. The National Weather Service said the previous record was 107, set on August 8th and 10th in 1981 and July 30th in 1965. Visitors and residents gathered along the waterfront at the Salmon Street Springs Fountain on Saturday, KATU reported. At one point, a group of naked cyclists rode through, reporter Dan McCarthy tweeted. Only in Portland, he wrote. We're serving people who are already suffering from chronic health conditions, so whatever we can do to help people stay safe when they have nowhere else to go. Scott Kerman, executive director of the Blanchard House Shelter in Portland, told the station. Nonprofit groups are trying to help the homeless in Portland and other Oregon cities with cooling centers. KLBI reported that the Medford Senior Center was offering food, water, and cold drinks. The Medford Senior Center volunteers said this type of shelter is vital to the community. Awesome. It's great. God bless them. Richard William Harris, a man who has navigated through heat and cold off and on for about 30 years, told the station. I'm just glad they're here because I sure needed it, and I don't want to die out here from heat stroke. If it wasn't for this place, I don't know what I would do. The Oregon Health Authority lifted COVID-19 capacity limits at pools, movie theaters, and malls to help people beat the heat. Sir.
Man.
It's almost too hot to talk about it.
You know, as I sit here with beads cascading over my brows.
My God.
This ain't cool. And, you know, I thought leading up to it, I thought part of it might have been hype because the closer we got, the higher those temps were going.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that it was kind of like when the snowstorm thoughts
kick
in, and the closer we get, it's like, oh, it's going to be 29,000 inches of snow. And then we get that little light dusting that make it inconvenient to hit the windshield wipers to get it off the windshield.
Right.
I was hoping it was going to be something along that line. And, you know, my son in town with me right now, and he was checking out the temps, and we're watching it hit the exact numbers that they're talking about throughout the day.
Right.
And it's just like, oh, we really here.
Y'all wasn't playing.
Nah.
Yeah.
I'm glad these places are opening up, you know, and these cooling centers. That's big. I know we did get up Friday and, you know, take some water bottles and ice chests and dropped them around the city in a couple of places.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Please tell the good people about the efforts of Woke PDX.
Yeah, so the Woke PDX crew, at the thought and request of our head honcho, Faith Wilson, we gathered up. She challenged us all to get some containers to fill with ice and put some water bottles in them and get them out around the city. So we got it going with the hashtag PDX needs water and mossied up, and we all challenged more people, and it's been kind of cool watching it you know, people do the challenge and add more people to the challenge.
That's dope.
But we're definitely trying to do, you know, our part in there. But yeah, I just, as much water as I drink, and I was just seeing how like fast my cold water was getting room temperature and closer to a light boil. So I knew that, you know, this being able to have a bit of fresh water in this heat, something cold and cool,
yeah,
you know, was a moment for the people that we were able to reach in these other organizations that were out there, because I definitely, you know, saw quite a few out doing their parts.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to everybody listening that is, you know, attempting to do anything to help, you know, people out here get through. And shout out to y'all and whatever y'all have to do to make it through right now, because this is ridiculous. Like, I'm sitting here like, oh, you know, I've seen hot before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
That's what, and for the people, right quick, before we jump off of this.
Yeah.
We don't, no one cares where you, how hot it is where you've been before. Nobody cares. Hot is hot, bro. Like, let's stop.
Right.
Please. It's hot. Just let's agree it's hot. Can we deal with that?
Can we please? Because it's extremely hot. It's extremely hot right now.
Well, we got Georgia Governor Brian Kemp lashing out after the DOJ challenges new voting law. Mm. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp sharply criticized the Department of Justice and Biden administration on Friday for suing his state over its new voting law. Let me be clear. The Department of Justice lawsuit announced today is legally and constitutionally dead wrong. Shout out Big. Their false and baseless accusations are quite honestly disgusting. Mm. Kemp, a Republican, said at a news conference where he called the lawsuit a politically motivated assault on the rule of law. The governor, who has championed and defended his state's voting law as common sense election reform, said that the lawsuit was a product of Democrats' failure to pass the For the People Act this week, and that the Biden administration was trying to force an extreme agenda on states. I can't say I'm surprised. The president and his administration, Stacey Abrams, and their far-left allies have lied about the Election Integrity Act from the beginning, he said. Friday morning, Attorney General Merrick Garland announced a lawsuit against the state of Georgia, arguing that the law enacted in March was intended to deny or abridge Black Americans' votes. Garland has said he would ramp up the Justice Department's staff and efforts to protect voting laws and scrutinize new voting restrictions enacted across the country. Kemp vowed to fight the lawsuit in court while portraying the legal challenge as a threat to conservatives everywhere. They're coming for you next. They're coming for your state, your ball game, your election laws, your business, and your way of life, he said. He said your ball game.
Your ball game. You'll sit down somewhere, dog.
He also suggested Garland's news conference was designed to draw attention away from the border crisis because it occurred close to when Vice President Kamala Harris's plane landed on her southern border trip. In fact, Harris's plane had landed more than an hour before Garland's news conference.
I just need someone, and maybe this has already happened, I just missed it in the news, but I just need somebody to ask them, what does providing water and refreshments to people in line have to do with voting integrity? Like, to me, that's the obvious point that you can argue and be like, no, y'all just playing games. This is voter suppression. Tell me, like,
yeah. There isn't one, and I know that, I don't know a thing. But the assumption of trying to see where someone's argument and stance, right?
Because
right. Trying to put this out as maybe incentives.
Right.
And it's like,
No,
but it just, as we've seen time and time again, especially over these last 5 years now, the reaching, the pulling at straws is nuts, and it's going to continue to be that, and hopefully we can keep Gopher popping them back into those holes they're popping out of with the shenanigans.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I think it was Lindsey Graham defending this, and someone asked him specifically about the refreshments, about the water issue, and he was like, I don't know anything about that. But you're riding for it. Like, come on, man. I can't. I can't. This is happening in 2021, right in front of our faces. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Up next, though, the president lays out his crime prevention strategy as Republicans seek to tie increase in crime to calls for cuts to police departments. President Biden laid out his crime prevention strategy Wednesday amid a rise in gun violence in many cities as Republicans seek to tie the increase in crime to calls for cuts to police departments. President Biden emphasized that state and local officials in areas experiencing surges in gun violence can use $350 billion in COVID-19 relief funding to hire more law enforcement personnel, even if it raises the total number beyond its pre-pandemic level. I'm going to finish this story, but I just like, for real, like for real.
When I first came across this, bro, I legit had to like push back like from my seat.
Right.
Because I really had to take and digest that number for one. And then what that number is going to. After
right.
all the talks.
Yeah. Reform and all of that. Mm-hmm. They can also use that money to invest in programs that try to identify and mediate potentially violent conflicts. The administration will work with 14 cities, including Atlanta, Baltimore, and Detroit, that are increasing investments in such programs known as community violence intervention. It means more police officers, more nurses, more counselors, more social workers, or community violence interrupters to help resolve issues before they escalate into crimes, President Biden said. The Labor Department will use existing funding for summer workforce development programs for young people and will help connect formerly incarcerated people with jobs, administration officials said. The Justice Department will take additional steps to crack down on gun trafficking and revoke the license for gun dealers who willfully violate federal law. We will make sure you can't sell death and mayhem on our streets, President Biden says. Law enforcement officials and criminologists have said that pandemic stress and a police pullback amid last year's protests are likely contributors to the rise in crime. In the last 3 months of 2020, homicides rose 32.2% in cities with populations of at least a million, according to the Federal Bureau of Investigation's Quarterly Uniform Crime Report. Republicans say Democrats haven't responded sufficiently to the rise in crime and link it to a push by activists and some Democratic lawmakers to defund police departments following the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis officer last year. President Biden has opposed defunding police departments, resisting calls from some progressives in his party who backed Black Lives Matter activists on the issue. He called on the 2020 campaign trail for more transparency on police records, body cameras, and more money for community policing. Still, strategists from both parties who worked on close races think Republicans' focus on public safety helped the party win many suburban congressional districts in 2020, even as President Biden carried the top of the ticket. Democrats say the allocation of COVID-19 relief money to retain local police officers demonstrates that the party isn't abandoning law enforcement. No Republicans voted for that package.
I'm gonna go back up to this line. They also can use that money to invest in programs.
As opposed to should prioritize investing in programs.
Or it has been allocated. There's a section of this right. allocated to.
Right. Directly. I feel you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Up in the ante, huh?
Somebody said this is the crime bill 2.0. Biden's back at it. Biden's back.
You know, I want to throw out right here while we're talking about funding for public safety programs. So the legislative session did end. Mm-hmm. And so I think we talked offline about, you know, House Bill 2002.
Yeah.
Did not make it past the finish line, but it definitely broke bits and pieces off into other bills.
Good.
And one of them was House Bill 5006, which contained over $25 million in funding for public safety programs here in Oregon, with $4 million going to the restorative justice grant and $1.5 million going to the Reimagine Safety Fund. There's backfiling of lost revenue and elimination of supervision fees for $10 million,
okay,
which is a big one right there. And then the Criminal Justice Commission getting $10 million to support a Transforming Justice initiative that, of course, is going to invest in the communities of color here in Oregon.
All right.
The public safety.
All right.
That's something where seed money was directly allocated, not said, hey, y'all can figure something out if you feel like it.
Right. If it moves you, you can spend your monies over here. You know what I'm saying? It's really interesting how they're tying, you know, the rise in violence to the defunding the police movement. I would like to see the actual numbers in the cities that defunded the police and see what those violence numbers look like.
Uh-oh.
Right.
Are you asking for transparency? Are you asking? Yeah,
that's what I'm asking for. Transparency and accurate reporting. Don't give me some broad sweeping, because to be quite honest, how many cities have we actually heard where defunding the police actually happened? You know what I'm saying? The money that was taken away from one police, I don't want to say department, but what's the word I'm looking for? They defunded, what was it, the task force here?
Okay.
But then they reallocated it to another.
So it was just a unit that they basically took it
away. Right, they defunded one unit and then established another unit and just move the money around. So
they said, you guys are out. And they said, hey, you guys put these mustache glasses on.
No one will be the wiser. Oh, goodness.
Well, going into other things, up next, we have our interview with Kim McCarty from last month when we discussed the end of the eviction moratorium. An estimated 90,000 residents are facing eviction at the end of July due to the extension. This afternoon at 2 p.m. in Salem, the Community Alliance of Tenants is holding a press conference. You can find out more about today's press conference at oregon.cat.org/cancel-the-rent-campaign.
Hey.
Stay tuned for the interview.
What's going on, numbers listeners? This is DJ Ambush. I am here with Kim McCartney of Community Alliance of Tenants. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Cancel the Rent Digital Town Hall this Tuesday, May 25th from 6 to 7:30. Kim, how are you there?
Very good, thank you.
Good, good. So let's jump right into it. Cancel the Rent. What is this about? I would love to have my rent canceled. Is this where we just go when someone cancels my rent?
Cancel the Rent is a very sensible idea that we have been doing for the last year during this economic disaster related to the public health emergency of COVID-19. Cancel the Rent is a concept nationwide that says if we're going to protect people, they need to be able to be housed and be housed stably. And the only way that we're going to be able to do that if people don't have jobs is to be able to help them with their rent. And so we've been doing that all year. It's a very sensible solution. You know, we've had an eviction moratorium for almost a year now. There's been both local and federal assistance through rent assistance. There's been mortgage forbearance, a number of methods to keep people housed, keep people safe. And we're doing that by helping them pay their rent.
Okay. So you mentioned the moratorium expiring. That's happened relatively soon, right? Like 4 or 5 weeks?
Yeah, we're only 5 weeks from the eviction moratorium expiring.
Okay. And for what I understand, looking at possibly close to 90,000 evictions for the state of Oregon?
That's right. We're worried that 90,000 people have expressed insecurity in their ability to pay rent. And they're saying to us through census data that's been gathered that they feel uncertain that they'll be able to pay July rent. And we know that the eviction moratorium ends at the end of June. So those households are very much at risk of being evicted.
Okay. So what's the first step for our listeners? We have the town hall tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you recommend they possibly look into or research before the town hall, and then some recommended steps afterwards?
Yeah. Well, we recommend that you come to the town hall to find out what's happening in Oregon, get, you know, the real information about the impact of these potential evictions. How much is it going to cost Oregon if we don't, if we allow people to go into an eviction and become homeless? A recent study from PSU said it's going to cost $1 to $3 billion. And compare that to the cost of just helping people through rent assistance, which could be as little as $200 to $800 million.
Oh, man. This isn't new work for you guys. This is right along the line of what Community Alliance of Tenants has always stood for and has been participating in, the way they've been participating in our community. It said that you guys declared a renter state of emergency back in 2015.
That's right. In 2015, we declared a renter state of emergency because the cost of housing was becoming astronomical. There was no cap to it. Mm. A landlord could raise the rent on a regular basis in the course of the same year. And it was displacing people. And it was primarily displacing our Black and Brown folks, right, to make our communities increasingly unstable. So we declared a renter state of emergency and asked our state and local jurisdictions to put policies in place for stronger tenant protections, reducing and capping rent, and all in the name of keeping people in their housing and their community stable. Hmm.
Now, with the moratorium expiring, has there been any conversation from the governor's office about what the next steps are, them extending this moratorium?
With the moratorium expiring, we're concerned, we're demanding that the governor consider extending the moratorium. We haven't heard that the governor will do so. Other states, such as New York, has extended the eviction moratorium till the end of August, and they're doing it for very good reason. Many of our state agencies, working as hard as they are to get rent assistance into people's hands, to get landlords repaid for unpaid rent, it's going to take time to do that. And so that's what the eviction moratorium has offered us: time to get the resources to the people who most need it, and time to get our communities stable and in recovery.
Now, from what I understand, there was also some money set aside for landlords, and there were some, you know, mixed responses, but for the most part, landlords didn't want to take that money because it meant them not getting full rent. They're only receiving a percentage of their rent with regards to, you know, instead of getting the full rent. Has there been any conversations around that and just, you know, the impacts of that on renters?
Yeah. The Landlord Compensation Fund is what you're referring to. Provides compensation to landlords. 80% of their unpaid rent can be compensated by the state. The remaining 20% that's owed to them has to be forgiven, and they can't ask the tenant to repay that. So in some instances, that was really helpful because at the time, no one knew if there would be any federal rent assistance coming. So the state needed to act, and they needed to act quickly, and so this was one of the ways that they thought that they could really immediately get resources out into the communities to stabilize some tenants. And there's been a second round of applications for landlords. I think you're right that some landlords didn't apply because they thought that they could get a better deal by getting that rent assistance directly from the tenants. But I think both avenues, it's helpful to have many different ways of getting rent assistance into the communities. And I think all of that resource will be spent and to the benefit of tenants.
I hope so. Cause I mean, you're right. For them to hold out for that reason alone, we're talking about, you know, the social and psychological impact of being under that type of stress of wondering whether you're going to be house secure. Like, that's the serious business.
It's hugely stressful. We recently finished just last summer, did a study with Portland State University. And this survey of tenants, we asked the question, you know, how are you feeling? And the response was 84% were experiencing extreme levels of stress, health concerns, mental health concerns, all related to just, you know, will I be able to pay the rent? Will I still have a house over my head? Will my kids still be able to go to their school?
That's, I couldn't imagine. Could not imagine. Hopefully, again, you know, both the landlords do their part and available resources are provided for renters. Could you give us some more information about the town hall? What exactly would be taking place?
So the town hall, we're going to be sharing information coming to you from Policy Link, a nationally renowned think tank around many issues, including tenant protections. We'll also be hearing from Lisa Bates, a well-respected researcher from Portland State University. And with that information, then we're going to put it in perspective of hearing directly from tenants that have been impacted by the policies here in Oregon, such as, you know, the declaration form and, you know, kicking the can down the road with an eviction moratorium that lasts a week or a few months at a time and leaving people with that kind of uncertainty. We'll also be hearing from two national speakers that I think will be giving us some really inspiring insight. One is Tara Raghuveer from Kansas City, talking about the fight at the national level to get the resources that we're now seeing coming from the federal government to help people with rent assistance. And that campaign all along has been called Cancel the Rent. And that's the campaign in Oregon. And it doesn't stop here. We still need more resources. The $280 million coming to Oregon is not enough. We know that people need to pay back rent. We know that people still don't have jobs and they're going to need rent assistance in the future. They need utility assistance, et cetera. So she'll be very inspiring. And then we'll also hear from Sia Weaver from New York. And as I said, New York is extending their eviction moratorium until the end of August. So we'll find out how did they do that, you know, whereas many states are struggling to extend their eviction moratorium beyond June, which is the end of the CDC public health emergency. And then lastly, we'll be hearing from Koya Crispin here at the Community Alliance of Tenants. Koya has been a really important activist in the metro area for tenant rights, and we'll be hearing from her as well.
Excellent. So you guys have heard it. This is what's happening tomorrow. You need to go to oregoncat.org/cat-events/CTR Town Hall. Did I get that right? I feel like I read that right. That sound right, Kit?
It sounded right. It sounded right to me. And then we also have a new website that just kicked off last week. It's called canceltherentor.com.
That was easier. I should have just went with that one. I should have just read that one off. Kim, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else that you would like the people to know before we close out?
Yes. I want everyone to know that the rent assistance is available. May 19th, the online portal opened. It's called OregonRentalAssistance.org. I'll say that again, OregonRentalAssistance.org. It's very straightforward. By signing on there, you can get help with rent dating all the way back to March of 2020, and maybe even some rent for the future, July and forward. So almost 15 months of rent assistance. It's well worth your time. The resource could go quickly. I urge you to find out and get help.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, now.
Make sure you all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. again as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron needs to resign.
Hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush.
Brett Hankinson needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Special thanks to our researcher and writer, Claudia Claudio.
Miles Cosgrove needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Music by C's.
Jonathan Mattingly needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death. Hey. And convictions.
And convictions, B. Straight up. Y'all be, y'all try to stay cool out there, man.
Yes. And all this for 110 degrees.
Know this. Y'all getting this news with my shoulder hairs all out. y'all getting all this taco meat in your news. Do you hear
yes,
it?
Lord.
Do you hear the taco meat in the news? Because it's there.